out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system at radioarian.com.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Wednesday, the 11th of July, 2018. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting live at radioarian.com. I must actually give out an apology first off before I continue with the introduction. I forgot to put the repeats in yesterday for the Daily Nationalist, so anyone that was expecting to hear those repeats on the stream, I do apologise. Hopefully it won't happen again. I will make certain it doesn't happen again tonight. So I do apologise for that. You will get your repeats tonight. Now that's over and done with, I am pleased to say we have got Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson with us today. Matt, how are you doing today?
Yeah, I'm doing okay. I know I'm a day early, but got a doctor's appointment tomorrow, so I'm entertaining everyone today.
Well, that's it, just it, isn't it? At least you are here today. You certainly do your bit for the cause. Nobody can accuse you of not working hard for nationalism. And continuing the trend that we've actually started with your show, Matt, your Thursday show, I believe we've got some good news to begin with today again.
As far as Russia is concerned, yes. This is a relatively new story.
And the Boers. Good news for South Africa as well, I would say, as well as Russia.
Yeah, well, and this is the thing. The Boers are realizing that Russia has opened doors for them. We know that the doors are being slammed shut on them all over the place, which is no surprise to anybody. But I'm sure the anti-Putin people will figure out a way to spin this in a negative way. But these Boers are coming in with tremendous farming abilities. They could revitalize rural areas. They're coming in with some capital. They're landowners. They're all very literate. And they're coming into Russia and they're saying that this is a place for us, because they're coming into the Caucasus Mountain area. There's a lot of land given away for free there. So if these people are able to sell their farmsteads, if that's possible, they could pocket that money and use it for travel and not have to pay a dime. Except for their buildings, the land would be free, something that Russia has in abundance. So because they have capital with them, because they have ability, and because they seem already to be patriots, really appreciating what Russia's done for them, it's certainly in their interest to let these Boers in. We're talking about a fairly large number that's already there, and it's going to grow now that this has been in the – I don't know about the South African press. In the Boer press, I have no idea, but it's all over the Russian press today. And even though these people aren't Orthodox, they're extremely sympathetic. And it's one of the reasons that they're choosing Russia, because it's a place that they know that being white is not a crime. It's a place where their mentality can be respected, and they have a lot of sympathy in the Russian population because of what's going on in South Africa. So it's really an excellent – it's a great situation. It's a white pill, no doubt.
No, I think it's fantastic. I mean, what you're talking about, I mean, there could be up to 15,000 South African farmers moving to Russia, to the Sebastopol area. They've got a delegation there at the moment. There's three people there at the moment talking about it. It has, as you say, it's already been done by a few families, and what they're talking about is moving all their livestock there. They're bringing, I think it's $100,000 each or something like that, and they're expecting to get a land lease for 100 years. They'll be bringing all their livestock, all their special rare breeds that they have, and they're being quite open about it. The reason why they are having to leave South Africa is because they're being persecuted by the government. The government is saying that they're going to not even pay them for the land. They're just going to steal the land from the Boers, kick them off it, and not even pay them for the farms. And this is coming down the road, and they want to get out before that happens. And they've looked at Holland, and they can't go back to Holland. They can't go back to Germany. They can't go back to any of these countries that they originally left from, let alone go there as refugees. So, I mean, the farmland just isn't there. But when you look at Russia, you've got masses and masses of farmland. Apparently, some people have been saying, well, send them to Siberia. You can have that all for free. But because of their acclimatization to the South African temperature, there's no way that they'd be able to get on in Siberia. So this Sevastopol area looks like it's going to be just right area for them. And when you think of these murders, you know, there's been 3,000-4,000 murders since 1998. And that's not including all the people that have been injured as well by these black savages that go after them. So, and it's not, and as you were saying earlier, Matt, it's not just that they'll be able to farm there, but they've looked into this and thought, well, these are people that we will be able to get on with. And this is one of the bits that's been left out of the mainstream press, because it has been reported on RT and a couple of other places. But one of the Russian sites, I think it's VK or something like that, I managed to pull a quote out from there. And this is a quote from there. It says, the delegation consists of only three people, the professor of theology of the University of the Free State and the visiting professor of the University of Groningen, Netherlands, Jan Adrian Schliebusch, his bearded son Edish, and the English-speaking daughter-in-law. They cannot be considered official representatives of any state institutions, but they are the spokesmen of the will of all the Boers of the Free State. Slibushi has visited the Cossack Museum, the exhibition My Russia is My History, and the Orthodox Cathedral, actively communicating not only with officials, but also with the clergy, despite the difference between the radically different Protestant and Orthodox views on the world order. And he's got a quote here by him. He says, we were inspired by the development of Russia in recent years. We are Christians. We are for traditional values. And the revival of such values in Russia attracts us. The main problem of South Africa is liberalism and Western liberal values. It was the liberals who created the situation in which we found ourselves. So we are also running away from liberalism. And that was Eddie Schliebusch, the son of the professor. And I find it interesting that the people that they're sending over is a professor of theology, you know, a professor of religion, to see whether they will be able to get on with the Orthodox guys. And I'm Protestant and Orthodox, they are differing views. But the fact is that, you know, they are traditionalists and they are against liberalism. And you would hope that they would be able to get on because they share the same Christian ethics and Christian morals rather than sharing the same Christian dogma, if that's the right word for it, or customs. And this is what I would be hoping. Anyway, Matt, have you heard anything else about it?
Well, you know, their particular kind of Protestantism grew up in South Africa among South African whites. If it had grown up anywhere else, it would be a complete disaster today. But because of that particular situation there, where whites have to think in racial terms, they have no choice but to think in racial terms. The church, the Calvinist church has been racialized to some extent. Throughout the world, Protestants are converting to Orthodoxy in every country in the West. There's a huge flood of them in America as of right now. So many of them bring their Protestantism in, and it can be a problem, because really those two churches have almost nothing in common. But they're seeing something else. Protestants are converting all over the place. And I think, because they're seeing what their church is in Europe and that these churches are pro-migrant so long as they're not white. And the outrage here is that, you know, they're bringing in floods of migrants, not refugees. No one's fleeing persecution here, but the Boers. And because they're being flooded by non-whites, these people aren't welcome anywhere. Except in Russia.
That's the thing, isn't it? Real refugees. There were real refugees, real refugees that are fleeing from having their land taken and from being butchered by the government persecution for their race. You would think that they would be welcomed in Europe. That, you know, they tick all the boxes, don't they? All these reasons why we are told we should be accepting dark-skinned hordes from the third world. when they're just, you know, they're just basically trying to come to Europe because they want more money. And yet in this case, you've got people that are genuinely fleeing persecution because of their race. And, you know, these aren't poor people. These are people that are going to properly enrich the area that they come to with livestock, with rare breeds, with farming. They're going to turn the empty land into a lush paradise of livestock and be able to feed people with it. And yet they haven't got a hope in hell of getting into Europe, have they?
Well, these European states constructed modern South Africa. I think if there's one group of people other than Russians that are unwelcome in Europe, it would be the Boers. The left says that they have profited from apartheid. They're the ones who constructed it and liked it, supported it, and therefore they have no place in a new multicultural Europe. That just makes the Russian welcome all the more powerful. And it's a statement. I have not read anything in English about this yet. I know they're leaving a lot out, and I think they'll do everything they can to drive a wedge between the two groups. Like they've been trying to drive a wedge between Russia and China for got over a decade now, trying to even foment a war if possible. So this is what they do. In the Russian press, they're talking about that these people are very sympathetic to Orthodoxy. So there's a lot of potential there. And Russia is actually enriched by this for the reasons that you say. And they're coming in with a tremendous patriotic attitude. And so these people would be you can see a picture why liberals wouldn't want them. Despite the fact they're actual refugees, they won't be able to be herded to the polls, voting for all the right parties and all the right movements. These are highly literate. These are intelligent people. They're successful people up until this new regime took over. But beyond that, we need to remember this is what's in store for all of us when our countries are flooded to the point where we become a minority. If we're in bad shape now, you imagine what it's going to be when we're ruled over like they are in South Africa. The South African situation is that everything that we had predicted, as always, came true to the letter. Everything that the left predicted, as always, was completely false and in dreamland. So this is serious on numerous levels, but it shows you what Russia is and what Russia is becoming. And they just realize that there's nothing that they can do to satisfy the West. The liberals out over there are always going to hate them. So they've, embrace that, and this is what they're doing, and it's great news. They have a lot to offer over there.
Well, not just what the wealth that they're bringing over, but when you think about the skills that they've got, I mean, their heritage in their blood. Their ancestors were the ones that built an entire civilization in some of the harshest terrain that there is out in Africa. They turned an area which now needs food aid. They turn that into the breadbasket of the world. I mean, South Africa never used to have to take food aid. It was feeding the rest of the world. And it was these Boers' ancestors that built all the infrastructure that was able to provide that and do that. And, they will be an absolute asset to Russia if they are brought to an area like Sebastopol. And if they interbreed with the population, that's going to be great for the population. It's positive on all fronts. It's positive on a eugenic front. It's positive on the help that they will give in developing that part of Russia. It's just positive all around. And it means that 15,000 white people will be safe from these savages out there in Africa. And I've just as an example of what is going on in Africa, what these Negroes are like, I've got another news story here, and I'm surprised this actually made it out into the British press. This is actually from the Daily Sun. It says, boys in the Congo have been forced to rape their mothers while blood-drinking soldiers have feasted on the flesh of dying victims, a nightmarish new report claims. And this is today. This isn't 200 years ago. This isn't adventurers going out to Africa and finding cannibals. This is happening right now. Rebels and government troops in the Kasai region, of the African country have committed sickening atrocities, including mass rape and cannibalism, UN human rights experts claim. In one horrific massacre, 186 men and young lads from a single village had their heads chopped from their bodies, the report says. The team investigating the conflict in the Kasai region told the United Nations Human Rights Council last week that they suspected all sides were guilty of war crimes and offences against humanity. Their detailed 126-page report catalogued gruesome attacks committed in the conflict, which erupted in late 2016, involving the Kamuin and Nasupu and Banamura militias and the Congo's armed forces, the FARDC. So that's the official government forces as well as these militias. The testimony included boys being forced to rape their mothers, little girls being told witchcraft would allow them to catch bullets, and women forced to choose gang rape or death. What happened in the Kasai simply beggars description. Congo's human rights minister, Marie-Angie Mushabekwa, told the council. The report said, one victim told us that in May 2017, she saw a group of Kamuin and Nasupu militia, some of whom sported female genitals as medals. Some witnesses recalled seeing people cutting up, cooking and eating human flesh, including penises, cut from men who were still alive and from corpses, especially FARDC, and drinking human blood. Lead investigator Bakra Wally Najaye told the council that in one incident, at least 186 men and boys from a single village were beheaded by the Kamuin Nasupu. The rebels group includes child soldiers forced to fight, unarmed or wielding sticks, who are convinced that magic has made them invulnerable. Many such children were killed when FARDC soldiers machine-gunned them indiscriminately, said Ndiaye. Now, this may not be happening in South Africa. This may be happening in the Congo, but it's exactly the same people that are doing it. It's the Congoid human that carries out these kind of acts, and it always has been. It's the jet black Negro that they have in South Africa, that they have in Liberia, and that they have in the Congo. It's exactly the same people that do this, and it doesn't matter if it's 200 years ago or now. They are still going to be chopping each other up into little pieces and eating them. That's just what they do. You know, this just really brings it home what these people are like. And those boats that are coming over into Europe, they're full of these people. When they say we are fleeing war, what they mean is these people that are coming here are the type that cut off women's genitalia and make them into necklaces to wear, cut off people's penises while they're still alive and cook them up in a pot and eat them. I mean, I don't know how these they can really be called human, people that do things like this, Matt. I really don't. They don't show any of the traits of being human, do they? They're not humane people.
No, to be human, you know, you have to be both rational and free. And of course, the two things are closely connected. You can't be free without reason. You can't be rational without being free. And that means these people are not. Not just everything walking around on two legs automatically qualifies as human. That's a ridiculous way to understand it. Just because they look vaguely human doesn't mean they are. I initially thought this was a false news story until I realized that this is coming from the Liberal Human Rights Watch. This is coming from liberal sources, this report. And it's coming also from the UN and the Congo, the government of the Congo is being confronted by this. And if anything, they're saying at the very end of the article that they're understating it, that there are far more mass graves. Initially, I think it was 86, and now that there's well over 100, and there may be even more. And this is exactly – you're exactly right. This is what's being imported. And similar things – and we've all read similar things about what's going on in South Africa, that these kind of subhuman acts are being done against Boer farmers too. And they do it against each other. But when – they're faced with white people, of course, they're going to be the first ones to get it. This is a true story. Our enemies are the ones who put this out. And that's why, you know, it was so sensational. I thought it wasn't true. But it clearly is when it's Human Rights Watch, the UN, all these other groups are issuing these reports. And now they're saying that they're understating the matter. So, yes, there's the same racial group. And this is the army. Now, rebel groups are doing this, but they're doing this all the time. The Chinese did it in the Korean War. Child soldiers were a day-to-day thing. And I don't know if their families were threatened or if they were told that the Americans are going to run the minute they see us because they're cowards. Whatever they said to them, that's what's getting these kids, sometimes not even with uniforms or rifles, to fight for these, to fight either for the state or for the rebel groups. So, no, I'm not, they're not human. And humanity has everything to do with how you behave and how free you are in terms of your mentality. You know, these because you have two legs doesn't automatically make you human. It's that simple.
Well, I have no doubt that the numbers are actually a lot higher than we're actually being told here. But it is interesting that we're told about it when it's blacks doing it to other blacks. And we're supposed to be feeling sorry for them and wanting to offer them refuge from this. But they won't tell us about the farm murders and about the horrific things that go on there and the horrific acts that are carried out by the blacks against the whites. They will only tell us about this because they want us to feel sorry for them. But I am surprised that, you know, they would actually put this in the newspaper. I guess it's because they say, oh, well, that's happening in Africa. And the magic dirt theory, of course, when these Negroes get here into Europe, they can be British as anyone else. And then they just magically stop thinking like this. They magically stop behaving like this. And I guess if they were to go back over to Africa, the magic dirt would hit them again and they'd become cannibals again. But this behavior is the same wherever they are. I mean, once the whites left Haiti, they reverted back to this sort of thing. Once the whites left Liberia, they reverted back to this sort of thing. And we hear about it happening in London. We find bodies that have been chopped up, bodies of children that have been chopped up. We hear of kids being involved in exorcism rituals and black magic rituals that are carried out by these Negroes. We even hear of Negro pimps. And their black prostitutes that they've managed to bring over are terrified that they've got spells on them and curses on them. And if they run away from their pimp, then, you know, that they're going to die and they'll be attacked. The amount of fear that they put on these people with this belief in witchcraft and magic, it's absolutely barbaric. But they say that, you know, these are medieval practices. They are barbaric practices. But I don't think we were ever like this in medieval time. You know, we weren't cannibals. We weren't chopping people up and using body parts. Possibly the Jews might have done. They've got a history of, you know, using blood rituals and harvesting blood and body parts. But certainly not white people. We never had barbaric practices like that. Imagine that. We're wearing a necklace made out of female genitalia. You know, that's what these creatures are doing. It's like, the imagination that they have to carry out those sort of acts, it just doesn't exist within white people. We find it very hard to comprehend, you know, how these things could actually go on because, like you say, Matt, we think that if people have two legs and they're able to talk, then they must be exactly the same as us. They're not. They don't look like us. They don't sound like us. They don't smell like us. They don't act like us. They behave like monsters, like devils that out of your worst nightmare. That's the sort of thing that is going on over there. And that's what we are importing into our countries. Well, I'm glad to say Italy has had enough of it. Italy, we've spoken about a few times on the Thursday show. I know today is Wednesday. But I've got another article here from Breitbart. It says, Italy has witnessed a remarkable drop in new migrant arrivals in 2018, with numbers for the first half of the year 80% lower than over the same period last year. According to data released Monday by the United Nations Immigration Agency, a total of 16,000 migrants have arrived by sea into Italy this year as of July 8th, whereas over the same period in 2017, a total of 85,000 migrants had arrived. And I dare say that that's those 16,000 migrants that actually arrived in Italy, that was probably before the election, because they've certainly done a good job of putting a stop to it now. Continuing here, it says, unsurprisingly, the number of migrant deaths in the central Mediterranean Sea has also decreased significantly, falling from 2,250 to less than half that, or 1,058 in the same six-month period. The drop in migrant sea deaths due to more stringent immigration policies demonstrates that tougher immigration regulation in these situations helps save lives, contrary to the fallacious argument to the contrary. The dramatic drop in migrant arrivals began with accords made last summer between Italy and the Libyan Coast Guard to prevent NGOs from picking migrants up off the coast of that nation, and has been further fueled by the new populist government's hardline stance against illegal immigration and its resistance to the infamous NGO shuttle service from North Africa. Interior Minister Matteo Salvini, who we've spoken about quite a few times, who according to recent polls is Italy's most trusted politician, ran for office last March on a platform centred on regaining national sovereignty and effectively addressing Italy's mass migration problem. In early June, Salvini announced a three-point immigration reform program, which included increasing the number of repatriation centres for housing immigrants, reducing the number of arrivals by stricter border control, and streamlining the deportation process for those who have no legal right to be here. Last year, Salvini described the migrant crisis as an invasion that was being orchestrated by Brussels after European Union-backed NGOs were accused of working with the people smugglers. You can't any longer speak about immigration, but about an invasion, organised, funded and planned by Brussels with the complicity of Rome, Salvini said in May 2017. At that time, several NGOs and non-profit charities were under investigation for allegedly exploiting migrants and colluding with human traffickers and the mafia. Several organisations were accused of arranging to meet migrant boats just a few miles off the African coast to shuttle them to Italy and of accepting bribes from criminals. Well, it looks like they've certainly put a stop to that now. I don't think there's even been one boat since Salvini put his foot down and said, we're not accepting them. And then Spain stepped forward and then Soros went to meet the guys over there in Spain. I mean, what we were saying about Italy, and, you know, because sometimes we get accused of making things seem better than they are, but I think that this confirms that Italy certainly has, you know, it has managed to turn the ship around, I think, Matt.
Yeah, so to speak. Yeah. I don't know. In that same article, there is a sub-article that says that Rolling Stone magazine, which I thought went out of existence, but they want now a war against Italy because of this. The system is so obsessed with bringing the third worlders over here and keeping white people out that they're willing to say anything and do anything to make this happen. The most interesting part of this article and several others like it is that because Italy has put its foot down and this is becoming more and more popular throughout Europe, the attempts to get over here are lessening. There are fewer deaths at sea because a lot of these people say, well, we can't get anywhere, at least as far as Italy is concerned, then there's no point in trying if we're just going to be turned away. So this is actually saving lives, for better or for worse. Now, Salvini says that this is all about Rome and Brussels. But, you know, he's well aware, and he said that a year ago, but he's well aware it's really the private sector that's behind this far more than the state. But the state certainly is important. This policy, so what almost 90,000 brought in last year, that's 10 infantry divisions worth of young men brought over here. You're talking about, you know, armies upon armies of these guys that have been imported and then can be mobilized at a moment's notice. But at the same time, once you, it was like in the Philippines when Duterte said that he was going to shoot drug dealers, about 800,000 turned themselves in because they're scared. It's the same thing here. The minute they said we're not taking them, the boats aren't leaving shore because what's the point at that stage? I know Soros went right over to Madrid. This is an absolute obsession with these people, whether it be low wages or just, you know, just to destroy white people. Do you see whites as the only real competitors to their power, possibly maybe even the Chinese in the future. And so they have to be wiped out. This is about competition. And of course, this is also about wiping out Christianity, with these third worlders. So these people, plus low wages, they have numerous, utility for the regime, for Jews and for these private sector NGOs, because they are organizing them. They are mobilizing them. And they're promising them all kinds of things to come over. So what the U.S. is going to do against Italy is another matter, but you already have elite peoples talking about war or something like that, even sanctions, whatever they want to do. That wouldn't surprise me over the next year or so that starts developing.
Well, it's great news that what it's done, it's proved what we say, that if you stop going to pick them up, they will stop coming. So it's just destroyed that liberal argument that we must send these boats out there to rescue them, because if they know that they're not actually going to get to Italy and they know that the boats can't dock in Italy, they've got no interest in coming. You know, we don't have to shoot the boats. Just tell them. We don't have to start shooting the boats. We just have to say, no, we're not taking you. And then they won't even push off from the shore. So, you know, it's proved that fact. He's shown that it can be done. And I think we're going to see, obviously, we're going to see a harsher rhetoric in Hungary and Austria. And we're seeing all these countries come together with the Visegrad countries and this Seehofer from Germany as well, Angela Merkel's counselor or whatever he is, that's totally against having open borders. I think we could conceivably see the EU change direction, which will, of course, then put pressure on Britain as well to stop having having these open borders. And I know we've got other troubles there in Britain at the moment with Theresa May and her Brexit shambles anyway, but just looking at what's happening with the EU, things are very positive. You know, whatever we can do to prevent these savages coming into Europe, that's what we have to do, because these sort of people that are coming here are exactly like those ones from that report in the Congo. That's what Italy is filled with. That's the people that Salvini wants to send back. I forget how many it was he actually said. It was in the millions that he was going to send back. And he hasn't even started on that one yet, the repatriation. So I'm looking forward to reporting on that, Matt. Anyway, that brings us to the end of the podcast. So thank you very much for coming on today. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I'll be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory. We'll be right back.